And before we get going, we'll start with a roll call. Amy?
Chair Lozar?
Here.
Regent Dykstuen, are you on the phone?
Dykstuen's here.
Thank you. Regent Sheehy?
Here.
Thank you. Regent Miller?
Here.
Thank you. Regent Rogers?
Here.
Thank you. Regent Dombrowski is excused. Regent Tuck?
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Christian?
Here.
Thank you. I believe we have McCall Quinn representing Governor Bullock's office today on the phone. We're joining us shortly. And then I believe OPI is excused from the call.
Thank you, Amy. So just as way of introduction for the meeting today, I think maybe the most important thing I'd like to do is introduce our newest regent, Regent John Miller, to the board. Regent Miller is coming to the board as a graduate from MSU Bozeman with a degree in business management, and he's at University of Montana right now pursuing a JD and an MBA degrees at the Alexander Blewett, the Third School of Law, and we are excited for Regent Miller to be joining us. I want to say thank you to the Associated Students for their role in the process, and for Governor Bullock for appointing Regent Miller to the board. So, Regent Miller, welcome to the Montana Board of Regents.
Thank you very much.
I did get a message from Regent Dombrowski. She sends her regrets that she is not able to join us at today's meeting. Today we'll be covering a handful of different things. You'll see on our consent agenda we've got a couple items, somewhat typical equity interest item, as well as some staff items, tenure at two of our colleges, and then we sort of dig into what is typically in our ARSA committee, a level two action item on some items coming from the University of Montana, as well as an action to be taken around refunding, restructuring debt, and laying the groundwork for new borrowing at University of Montana. And then within MSU, we're looking at an agreement with the foundation with some work that's going to be done on the Bobcat Athletic Complex. And then we will take a little, a few minutes to do public comment, then move on to our information items, which includes our intent to plan a new item up for consideration on the Montana Board of Regents designated tuition waivers for National Guard. Some work that we've heard a lot about on internal audit charter with some of the additional work we've been doing in that space. We'll be looking at a charter for consideration in a future meeting, as well as some updates to our public records requests. So with that, I will we'll move on to the next item, which is approval of minutes. You'll see on the board material we've got those listed for May 22nd and May 23rd. So I will entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes from our May meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Regent Sheehy. Any discussion on the minutes from the members of the board? Any public comments? Seeing no further comment, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. Okay. Meeting minutes have been approved. So moving on to Christian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too extend a welcome to everyone on the call. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Want to make just one quick introduction. Generally, we don't, but I believe the newest member Our family of campuses, Dr. Les Cook is now officially on the job at Montana Tech, and want to welcome him to that post and look forward to an in-person meeting soon. But we've had several calls, and he is there getting moved in, only a week or two delay on getting his furniture there, so that's been kind of fun for the family. But making progress. Dr. Cook, welcome to the call, and welcome to the Montana University system.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So, conference call, we usually don't get too far in depth on Commissioner's report. We'll take up in September most of what we need to cover there. I would like to simply acknowledge the work of the audit committee. Obviously, you all are aware as board members of the audit, and it's been pretty well covered, but I want to acknowledge and thank the Legislative Audit Committee for their diligence, the legislative auditors under Legislative Auditor McKeever. I think, as I said in the committee hearing, audit has accomplished what it should. It identified areas that we need to work on, and it made recommendations for those areas, and we are well on our way to do that. It, as I said in the committee hearing, makes recommendations around policy changes that we need, what I evaluate as training requirements that we need, strengthen of internal controls, which we need, and we're committed to do that. I committed to the committee that we will make those changes and those improvements on as rapid a timeline as we can. We've committed in the report to doing that by the end of the year, but I can tell you our intent here is to get those changes in place sooner than later. Many of them are in place. We've already adopted travel policies, meal policies, other things. We've had training for every member of the team, including the senior leadership team here, have all been through the new training, and we will continue to do that as we move forward. We are committed to making the changes that are necessary within policy and procedures that we can support the work of the board moving forward. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would hand it back to you, and I believe we can move on to the consent agenda.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and I wanted to extend the thanks to you and to the staff for the work that you've done throughout the audit process, and you know the commitment to making those investments by the end of the year. I know, as a board, we're anxious to get those things taken care of, and I know we've all seen the plans, and we've already made significant headway in each of the areas that were identified. So, thank you for your work on that. Moving on to the consent agenda, as I mentioned, we just got a couple things in this area. Is there any members of the board that would like to move any items in the consent agenda down to the action part of the agenda? Hearing none, we will move down to the action agenda item A, level two executive summary. We'll go through each one of these action items one at a time, and then we will entertain a motion for approval. We'll just go one at a time, so a little bit different than our typical meetings. And so we'll hand it over to Deputy Commissioner Tessman.
Chair Lozar, members of the board, thank you very much for having me here. And I don't know, do we have Provost Harbor on the line or President Bodner?
Yes, John Hobbit.
Yep, we're okay. Both here. This is Seth.
Okay, if you have any questions about my introduction, please jump in. And of course, if you'd like to elaborate on the level twos, then I would invite you to do that. But I would remind the board that by the time program proposals reach this point in the process, We have generally had numerous discussions about these proposals. We've had discussions between relevant faculty in this office, oftentimes between campuses. Chief academic officers have had the opportunity to look at these proposals, and ultimately, at this point in time, our office is ready to make a recommendation on these level two items. And this morning, it's a bit atypical, I think, for the July meeting, but we do have three level two items, all of which this office supports. I will let Provost Harbor from the University of Montana introduce the items or designate someone else to introduce the items if he pleases. And I'll be happy to answer any questions or offer insight about this office's position on the proposal. But John, do you want to take it away?
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Brock. So the first one is a retitling. So the Department of Health and Human Performance has moved colleges that was previously approved. And as part of the organization, we are proposing to create a School of Integrative Physiology and Athletic Training that represents the themes of that unit. In the College of Health Professions and Biomedical Sciences, the units are more typically called schools rather than departments. That's sort of an academic cultural issue. And so it's a renaming to a school and a more accurate description of the area of emphasis within that unit. Similarly, the second one is a retitling of the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences to a school because it's also moved into the College of Health Professions and Biomedical Sciences. And we've added into that title occupational sciences because of the planned occupational therapy program. So those are the two retitlings. The third item is the establishment of a Mountain Water Institute at the University of Montana. This is designed to provide a structure and a set of activities that bring together faculty across many, many different disciplines who have interest in research and teaching and service around mountain water issues. So this is something that is part of the university's strategy to build much stronger internal interdisciplinary teams to enhance research, teaching, and service, to increase our competitiveness for major external funding. The Mountain Water Institute will, of course, work collaboratively with other centers across the state, but is focused on internal organization and collaboration rather at this stage rather than statewide collaboration and organization. And there are similar types of centers or institutes currently at other institutions or planned for other institutions. So that's a quick introduction, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. And the Mountain Water Institute is under our VP for Research and Creative Scholarship, and Scott is here as well if there are questions for him.
This is Martha. I just want to point out that due to the nature of the requests and the timing, these have not gone through the ARSA committee. We usually do it in that manner, but in the case of the summer and needing to move forward, ARSA hasn't met on these, just so that you board members understand that.
Thank you, Regent Sheehy. I appreciate that. I think this is maybe a good opportunity to have maybe an additional dialogue within the board, given it hasn't followed the typical process of information to action. So I'll sort of open up these three items for discussion from members of the board. Any bill that was geared toward
insurers, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Paul, and perhaps if we could have further discussion with the provost about the Mountain Water Institute, and I guess two things in particular. Number one, is there anything else like this in the university system at other units? In other words, how unique is this to the Montana University system? And then, perhaps secondly, further description about the workings of an institute, and that perhaps we're not creating something out of whole cloth, but rather putting the parts and pieces that are already there under one roof, if indeed that's my understanding of what we're doing here.
Sorry, Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Regent Tuss, there are other institutes in the state of Montana that that deal with water issues. In fact, we have a number of different organizations in the state that do this, and not all of them are institutes. And the Montana, the Bureau of Mines at Tech does a lot of work in this area. There is the Montana Water Center at Montana State University. There are research groups at MSU Billings, at Northern, who do work in this area. A couple of things just to point out. We had a really, I think, substantial and meaningful exchange involving the vice presidents of research from a number of different institutions. Earlier this summer, we had faculty here. There is support for building this kind of institute at the University of Montana to deal with some of the internal collaboration. And then there is definitely support, and it's our long-term intention, to create a wraparound organization that brings together all of these different entities across the state and allows us to have more of a singular voice, say, in answering requests from the public or the legislature. It allows us to have a stronger voice as we seek major external funding opportunities that would really benefit from kind of a statewide proposal. So our long-term vision is to build a wraparound architecture that brings together all of these institutes, but there's nothing like this right now at the University of Montana, and the first step is to have the internal coordination so that we can then plug that into the statewide wraparound organization. I would point out this is not an academic program per se, and so it's a little bit different in terms of, at least in my mind, in terms of questions surrounding duplication and the like.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Any other questions or comments from the board?
Casey, this is Martha.
Yep, Regent
Sheehy. First of all, I have no problems or questions about the retitling. Those are in due course type of reorganization items. With respect to the Mountain Water Institute, I had a question about, it says, UM researchers and educators on water science and policy are spread across multiple units. Could you be more specific about that? Are you talking about multiple units within U of M, within a department? I don't know. I do not understand what that means.
Yeah, Regent Sheehy, yes, you're correct. This is multiple academic departments, and so people who do research and teaching around water do it from many different perspectives. I'm actually a water researcher myself and have appointments in both geography and geological sciences, but people in biology, in law, in environmental studies, in many, many different academic units have work on water, and an institute like this brings together people and provides that range of perspectives on an issue so that we can come up with more holistic solutions and work around a water issue. I was previously involved in developing a water institute of this type at another institution, and it engaged people in political science and branches of the sciences, as well as even in performing arts, in terms of the way in which we convey knowledge and understanding issues. So, yes, it brings across people from many different colleges and academic departments.
Provost Harbor, in coming up with this plan to establish the Montana Mountain Water Institute, have you spoken to individuals in all of these different departments? Is there expressed interest from specific people?
There is. This actually came from the faculty who were interested in coordinating better across water research. So this is a faculty initiative that the administration is obviously supporting and encouraging.
Thank you.
Chair Lozar.
Regent Nystuen.
I'd like to hear from the University of Montana regarding the choice of the name of this institute. When I first saw this, Mountain Water, all I could think of was the years of court battles and the wrangling that the city of Missoula and the former water utility known as Mountain Water had. I thought initially, ooh, what are these guys doing, creating an institute? And we had to do a deeper dive into the, you know, what's about this. But Provost Harbor, was any consideration given to the name other than Mountain Water Institute?
So that history predates me in terms of this other title of mountain, well, the other use of the mountain water term. When I saw it come forward from the faculty, I interpreted it as in terms of, you know, we're in a mountainous region. A lot of the research that we do is specifically about water issues in mountain areas, and it struck me as being very, very appropriate. I'm not aware that there was a discussion. I'm simply not aware. There may have been around alternative titles to this, but it does reflect the sort of the focus of a lot of our water research is on water issues in mountainous areas in particular.
And Mr. Chair and Regent Nystuen, this is President Bodner. I think to add to that, you know, this institute is really the embodiment of a focus that we've really pushed at the university to encourage and enable interdisciplinary work. Problems that are solved at the or addressed at the intersection of disciplines. And this was created with a national and frankly international perspective in mind. If you think about the University of Montana, you know, whether it's the Flathead Lake Biological Station, if you think about really our location at the crown of the continent, the idea that water flows from not far from here to each of the major oceans. And this is really an initiative to enable our researchers to better collaborate and submit proposals and grants for work with national and international implications. And that name, I agree with you. I think locally there is perhaps some baggage or with that name locally, but I think at the national and international level, having that name really enables our researchers to articulate some of the differentiation and the unique perspective that our researchers have on the issue of water, given our location, given our expertise, given our history.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Bodner and Provost Harbor. Any other questions from members of the board on these three items? I did have one question. It seems to me that this, the Mountain Water Institute followed a process in terms of coordinating and meeting with players across the system with OGE's involvement. I think that's a good process and a good practice. I know we do this with a number of different level two considerations that come in front of the board. But what I would like to know a little bit more about is sort of that vision and maybe even that sort of timeline as it relates to sort of what you mentioned, Deputy Commissioner, the wraparound architecture for how we go about coordinating not just internally at University of Montana but across the system.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I appreciate the fact that there's some recognition of the conversation that led up to this proposal, and that conversation ultimately led to a full-day conference. Director Teal is here. He hosted that conference. We had probably 15 or 20 folks here for a full day, and much of that day was dedicated towards, first of all, seeing whether a wraparound architecture was possible to build right now. But once we realized that there were some serious kinks there, we realized it would be something we have to tackle over the course of the next year to 2 years. I think that group is in constant communication. I think everyone there is in support of building that wraparound architecture. I won't take up any longer than we need to, but just for example, the way that advisory boards and administrative structures are set up, you can't just link up one kind of research organization with one that exists on the other side of the state. Sometimes reporting requirements are different. So we have to think about how to pull these together, kind of in some of the same ways we think about pulling different banner instances together. It's just really tricky to figure out where they fit. But it is the priority. The same goal that you have in building one of these institutes on a campus which is increasing collaboration, allowing for a stronger voice. That's the goal that the whole state has. We just have one more sort of step of complexity to tackle before we get there. But I don't think that there's any delay in undertaking that.
No, and I'll just add one. So this is Director Teal. I'll add one note to that, which is we have this exciting opportunity right now in water research in Montana that we have a statewide National Science Foundation EPSCoR grant that's funding a consortium for research into environmental water systems. And that's a multi-campus group, in fact, beyond the MUS multi-campus group, charged with looking at water systems and watersheds across Montana and environmental issues associated with them. And one opportunity that we see here is working with that incredible network as a base to build some future housing for these collaborations, for a storefront, for policymakers or citizens to access all the incredible research on water that's happening in the university system.
You can imagine something similar to this around energy, you know, agricultural issues. That would be the long-term vision, is to have these kind of statewide entities in a number of kind of really relevant and important areas.
Thank you for that insight. Any other comments from members of the board? Questions? Hearing none, let's entertain a motion to approve action A, the level two executive summary, the three items from the University of Montana. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Regent Tuss. Is there a second?
Seconded by Regent Miller.
Okay. Any discussion from members of the board? From the campuses? Any public comment? Seeing no further comment, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Same
aye.
Sign. All right, motion passes. Let's move on to.
Was there an opposed? Or is there a delay?
It was a delay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on to action item B, request for authorization to refund and restructure existing debt and borrow new money, University of Montana. Deputy Commissioner Trevor.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Good morning. Just a few summary comments here before I turn it over to Vice President Paul Lasser at the University of Montana. We've received numerous updates, briefings, documents, planning sessions with the University of Montana on this topic. They've worked closely with bond counsel and consultants. Our legal counsel, Viv, has been in concert and working closely with this group. And I guess I say this to give you a perspective of the enormity of the amount of work that's gone in here and the level of detail that the University of Montana is prepared to provide related to this topic. We have advised against the ultra level of detail given the board, the phone environment that we're on, but also just in the essence of time, we've asked Vice President Lasseter to provide a high-level summary. And just know that this item comes with a recommendation from OG for approval. With that, I'd turn it over to Vice President Lasseter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. We appreciate your consideration of this request to refund our existing debt portfolio practically in its entirety, as well as authorize the borrowing of additional funds for deployment in various projects that will be, of course, approved by the board in the future. The current interest rate environment is really pretty phenomenal. While we're not at historical lows, we're certainly near historical lows with regard to both the taxable and tax-exempt markets. The yield curve is very flat. It has been inverted at various points in the last several weeks, providing an extraordinary opportunity to extend the maturity of our debt at very low cost. Additionally, the credit markets are such today that the demand for taxable and tax-exempt bonds issued by universities and other municipalities across the country is really extraordinary. Bottom line, investors are willing to pay up, which is good for us, helping us to keep our borrowing costs down. Our current debt portfolio is very front-loaded, requiring the use of approximately $15-plus million a year to service the debt for the next 6 years, at an average cost of approximately 3.21%. We're proposing extending that maturity, pushing out our average life of our portfolio to closer to 19 years, approximately 18.7 years, which is slightly longer than comparable institutions similarly rated to the University of Montana at the AA3 level, which is closer to an average of about 14 years. So this restructure moves us much closer to the norm for institutions similar to our organization. The cash flow savings that will be generated from this transaction in the short term are substantial. We're looking at, depending on the size of the ultimate offering, cash flow savings anywhere from close to $9 million a year down to approximately $7 million a year in debt service payments. So while we will be reducing the annual cash flow required to pay our debt portfolio, we will be extending that term for a period of time. This will give the University of Montana extreme flexibility in redeploying those funds either in improvements of the campus or in redeployment in operational strategic manners that will help us to improve enrollments and retention going forward. With that, I think I will just one other point. The weighted average cost of capital for the new portfolio, based on recent market conditions, would be approximately 3.63%, so only about 42 basis points higher than our current portfolio structure. And with that, I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Thank you, Vice President Lassiter. Any questions from members of the board?
Chair Lozar.
Yeah, Regent Nystuen.
Could we have a little bit more color on, in your proposal, it says creates room for borrow for strategic investments. I wouldn't mind hearing more from the University of Montana about, give us a flavor for what those might be. And secondly, I know that through the, you know, the budget challenges the University of Montana has had over the last couple of years, you've really dipped into your reserve levels. And I'm curious if any of these, this refinance is going to go towards replenishing some of the reserves for the future.
Chair Lozar, Regent Nystuen, thank you for that question. To be frank, there isn't a specific plan of deployment for these projects developed currently. However, we do know that there are several areas around campus that necessitate investment due to deferred maintenance issues, frankly. We want to take some of the capital that we're able to produce, both in terms of annual cash flow savings as well as any potential new money, in enhancing the student experience. I mean, everything that students see, touch, feel, and experience here at the University of Montana, we want to improve. We want to ultimately improve dorm residences. We want to improve recreational offerings. We want to improve campus dining. We want to improve educational spaces. We want to offer a top-tier, first-rate experience for our students here at the University of Montana, and this capital will help us do that. Over the course of the next 12 to 18 months, we will be developing a more robust and intentioned, well-intentioned capital plan, but the markets are such today that we really want to have that capital in our pocket so that when those decisions are ultimately made, we are able to capture bonds at current low historical rates. With regard to improving the university's fiscal reserve, yes, in short, that very well could help us generate significant savings that, if not spent currently, would in fact improve the operating margin of the institution and help us to bolster our reserves. Last year, being fiscal 18, we actually generated a surplus in the general fund. This year, projections are currently indicating that we will be near break even, maybe a slight use of existing reserves, maybe up to $500,000 or so. But we have reached a point of stability here at the University of Montana, but that stability is off a base of investment that is just too low, frankly. In other words, we're able to balance our budget presently. We're at a break-even point, but we do need to have more resources and ability to invest to make the kinds of improvements that will result in improved enrollments going forward.
Very good. Thank you. One more question on and that is, by any chance, will there be the potential that this debt will be placed at a bank? So in the past, I have recused myself if there was ever the potential that the bank that I work for would somehow have an opportunity to bid on or to have any of this debt placed with our company. Would you have an idea if that might be the case, or are you just going to go strictly to the bond market?
Chair Lozar, Regent Nystuen, we will be offering these bonds in the public market. To the degree that any institution has a desire to bid for the bonds, they will have that opportunity, but we will be going fully public in this transaction, no private placements.
Okay, thank you. With that, Chair Lowe's, I'll probably recuse myself just to be on the safe side.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. Any questions from the members of the board? Hearing none, I too, Regent Nystuen, thank you for letting us know that you'll recuse yourself. I too will be recusing myself, just given my role on the Federal Reserve. With that, let's entertain a motion to approve action item B, request for authorization to refund and restructure existing debt and borrow new money, University of Montana, Missoula.
So moved.
Moved by Regent Tuss.
Second.
Any discussion from members of the board? From the campuses? Any public comment? Public comment? All right, seeing no further comment, I will call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. All right, motion passes. What's that? And for the record, Regent Nystuen has recused himself and Regent Lozar has recused himself. Perfect. Let's move on to action item C, which has the longest title of any item in any board meeting. Action item C is, I'm not going to read it, but I will hand it over to Director Muffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This item is brought by MSU Bozeman. And it is a lengthy title because there are a number of issues that are included in this item. So basically, this is a request for authorization to lease Bobcat Stadium and the surrounding area to the MSU Foundation, the Alumni Foundation, for the purpose of constructing the Bobcat Athletic Complex, and also to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the foundation, and then later finalize the MOU and lease consistent with the project financing and associated documents Associated with the item, there are two attachments. One is the draft MOU and one is the draft lease, and both have been reviewed by legal counsel. Then this item also seeks $18 million in authority for the cost of the project. So this project, the leasing of property to the foundations, it provides us an exemption from a lot of the state contracting laws. And this is a standard process. It's codified in Montana Code in 2007. So this is something that allows the Board of Regents to lease property to the foundations for athletic facilities only. It's been used in numerous projects. The most recent was the MSU Northern Athletic Fields, March of 2018. The board approved the phase one of that athletic field improvement project. Other recent examples would be the Champion Center at the University of Montana and improvements to MSU Bozeman's outdoor track facilities. So this is a standard process, nothing out of the ordinary. So this project specifically will provide a variety of new space for student athletes and related operations. It'll be providing training areas, rehab areas, nutrition space, study areas, conference rooms, meeting rooms, locker rooms, offices for athletic staff, and also will provide a health provider some space to deliver services for student athletes and faculty. The facility is designed and is anticipated to improve the student-athlete experience, recruitment, retention, and graduation. So, again, this item is requesting $18 million in spending authority, no state funds. Project will all be financed with non-state funds, $15 million of it from external donations, $3 million financed by the university. The $3 million has three options that MSU is looking at. One would be an intercap loan through the Board of Investments, a loan from a local lender, or other university funds. And they're also asking here for approval to move forward with the MOU and lease to the foundation. So the plan is to enter into the MOU, finalize the lease with the foundation, and then if there's any significant changes to the MOU or the lease, which we don't anticipate there would be, they'd be brought to the commissioner for any kind of review. Vice President Least is on the phone to assist with any questions that you might have, and I'll stand for any questions as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Muffick. Any questions from members of the board?
Chair Lozar.
Regent Nystuen.
Here again, I probably should recuse myself if there's the potential that the bank that I work for, our company, would provide any type of financing, any type of bridge loans or any of those types of things. I know we've done those in the past, and so I probably should recuse myself for this vote again. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. Any other questions, comments from members of the board? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve action item C. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Regent
Rogers.
By Regent Rogers. Thank you, Regent Rogers. Any discussion from members of the board? From the campuses?
Casey, I have a question. This is Martha.
Regent Sheehy.
In transferring this, are we going to have any issues regarding the public's right to access to information regarding the funding?
Director Muffick or Vice President Lease?
Chair Lozar, this is Terry Lease, and appreciate the question, and Regent Sheehy. There's nothing really as far as the financing only. Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. I mean, the donor information would be confidential, as it always is. But in terms of financing, on their side, there's a bridge loan, because some of these donations will come in over a period of time, up to a maximum of 5 years, I believe. And that's really the only financing piece that would be. So other than the donor confidentiality, I don't see any other issues.
What about with respect to the planning document?
Yeah, the planning documents are completely public. We've got many of those are posted on the website already. That should be fine too.
Thank you, Vice President Least. Any other discussion or comments from members of the board? From the campuses? Any public comment? Hearing no further comment, I will call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. And any abstentions?
Regent Nystuen. Regent Nystuen.
Thank you. Motion passes. Let's move on to action item D, request for authorization to program and design Bobcat Athletic Complex, MSU Bozeman. Director Muffick.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you. So this item, also from MSU Bozeman, obviously, it's related to the previous item and authorizes the university to proceed with programming and design services of $1.5 million of non-state funds for the Bobcat Athletic Complex. This item is for project planning, programming, and design work only and does not authorize construction, financing, or any operations and maintenance. And this item is separate to allow for MSU to move forward with the programming and planning prior to the execution of the lease and MOU for two reasons, timing and no opportunity really for gifts of in-kind during the design process like there is with the construction process. Same details as far as the use of space. As the previous item, offices, study areas, training, rehab space, conference rooms, et cetera. This item was contingent or is contingent on the board approval of the previous item and its authorization of the memo of understanding and lease with MSU. Again, Vice President Least or I can stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director Muffick. Any questions from the board on action item D? Hearing no questions or comments, we'll move on and we'll entertain a motion to approve action item D. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Regent Sheehy. Is there any discussion from members of the board? From the campuses? Any public comment? Hearing no further comment, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. Motion passes.
AC, I probably better recuse myself, but I don't want to get caught in some type of a thing where I voted yes on this and recuse myself on the other. I think to be clean, I'll just recuse myself on that vote too.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. Regent Nystuen is abstaining from the vote.
Probably just to be on the safe side.
Thank you, Regent Nystuen. One last item to take action on today is the consent agenda. The consent agenda items A, B, and C. I will entertain a motion to approve the consent items. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Regent Sheehy. Any discussion or comments from members of the board? Campuses? Any public comment? Hearing no further comment, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. We'll just try this out. Any abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Consent agenda has gone through. Thank you. We're going to move on to public comment. I know typically this is towards the end of the meeting. We've placed it at this time period to seek public comment after taking action. and prior to going through our information agenda. So with that, if there is any public comment, we'd appreciate that you state your name and provide your comment. So is there any public comment this morning? Any public comment? Any public comment? Hearing no public comment, we will move on again to our information agenda for today's meeting. I'll kick it over to Deputy Commissioner Tessman for the intent to plan proposals.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. These intent to plan proposals are presented as information items. Earlier in this meeting, we addressed the level two proposals, which represent the culmination of a planning process. The intent to plan stage is a much earlier stage in the planning process. And these items are presented to you just to let you know that campuses are beginning that planning process in earnest now. Each one of these items does contain information about the purpose of the program, the way in which the program, the proposed program, fits with the institution's strategic plan. We ask each campus to highlight ways in which the proposed program may or may not overlap with other offerings in the Montana University system. And these intent to plans do not guarantee that there will ultimately be a level two proposal, nor do they guarantee that any level two proposal would, of course, be approved by the board. So this is just kind of a public airing of these proposals. And I would tell you that we've had the chance now to discuss all of these proposals among the chief academic officers and campuses. We suspect that some of these proposed programs will generate additional discussion in the coming months. And in particular, if you have your screen in front of you, I would let you know that the Master of Music with options in music technology and music education programs will involve some more discussion between the campuses. The Master of English and English Education option will also include some more conversation between the campuses. And then the two PhD proposals, one in public policy administration and the other in public affairs, will generate some conversation. I am sure that the ARSA committee and the regents will have much opportunity to engage with these proposals in particular, and actually any of these items before they appear as level two proposals. And I stand for any questions. I know that there are representatives from the various campuses who would be happy to answer questions as well.
Are there any questions for Deputy Commissioner Tessman?
Regent Sheehy here. This is not so much a question as a call to the board. The items that we have before us now raise an issue that we grapple with, and I know that on ARSA we've grappled with it for the entire time I've been on that committee, and that is, when does the board become involved? We're statutorily charged with the obligation of balancing and avoiding duplication to related things, and some of these look duplicative to me, and some of them look like they may shift things out of balance. And so I think that as a committee, we haven't had a chance at ARSA to look at these yet, but we may not want to wait until the level two. We may want to start having real discussions. I know the campus has discussed, but to the extent that ARSA committee members, the ARSA committee, or members of this board are concerned, I think that we should really take a look at these rather than on an information item as an overall policy matter. So ARSA is thinking about having an overall discussion about balance and duplication, and I'll let you know where we go with that, but I'm hoping to do that in the near future.
Thank you, Regent Sheehy. I too agree with that comment and the balance that we need to find in terms of ensuring that there's no duplication across the system, ensuring that we're as a board plugging in to the process at the right time and assessing as much information as we can in terms of sort of the environmental scan of the different degrees and programs that are offered through the system and the ones that are being proposed. So I look forward to ARSA continuing to sort of grapple with this with the leadership of Deputy Commissioner Tessman. I know he's committed to this as well. We, over the past 3-4 years, have made some adjustments in the process, and I think that we still have the opportunity to do some fine-tuning to ensure that we're weighing in at the right time and sending the right message as it relates to our statutory obligations. So thank you, Regent Sheehy, for that comment. Any other comments from members of the board? Hearing none, we'll move on to information item B, National Guard draft policy. And this is a policy for us to consider making an adjustment in our Board of Regents designated tuition waivers, of which we currently have 10 on the books right now. Several of them are for honor students. We have an American Indian tuition waiver. We have 4 that are associated with the military and our service members, and this morning we have another opportunity to discuss a waiver for National Guardsmen and women. So I will turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is an opportunity here for us to review this item before bringing it to you for action in September. So I'd just like to quickly give you a little bit of background here, some of the criteria associated with this waiver, the timing and participation of the current population of students, as well as some projections for the future and cost. So we've been working with the Governor's Office and the Department of Military Affairs, I'd say, for the last 6 months on this concept. It's not the first time that this office has, or this board has kind of addressed this issue. In 2011, this was actually added to statute. There is a statute on waivers that says that the Board of Regents may waive for these categories of students, and then it lists the categories. National Guardsmen were added into that in 2011. We did not subsequently act on that. That's up to the Board of Regents. I don't really have the background to tell you exactly why, but now issue has been laid on the table before us again, and so we planned in earnest with the Department of Military Affairs for this item. So the criteria quickly go as follows. You must be a member of the Montana National Guard and in good standing, and not have earned a bachelor's degree or higher. You need to meet all admissions criteria, and if so, you would then qualify for a waiver. So let's kind of rewind for just a second here. Why would we want to consider this? Obviously, the importance of our military and the connection to the state of Montana. The Guard is very much interested in this because it expands their ability to recruit. And that recruitment then goes to the next point of criteria, that this applies to resident students as well as non-resident students. So non-residents can come to the state of Montana and enroll in the Montana National Guard before receiving residency. So it is a recruitment tool for them. The other key point here on the criteria is that this would be a last dollar waiver, and in fact we state that in policy, which is different than the other criteria, the other areas in our policy. And what that means is that these individuals receive, who are in the Montana National Guard, receive other military-related scholarships, and that those scholarships would be applied first to the cost of tuition, then the waiver. So in terms of timing, I mentioned we'd bring this as an action item in September for implementation in the fall semester of 2020. So this gives us a great deal of time to coordinate with the campuses, work with the Department of Military Affairs, gives them advanced ability to begin recruiting students, and we thought that would be the optimal implementation time period. So in terms of how many students are we talking about currently enrolled in Montana, in the Montana University system, that are Montana National Guardsmen? There are roughly about 130 Guardsmen enrolled in the MUS. These Guardsmen are receiving somewhere between $2,000 and $4,500 per year from either or both Federal Army and Airmen tuition assistance and the GI Bill. So this would be the distance if we were to waive the remaining tuition bill for this group. It would be about $150,000 cost to the university system. So going forward, of course, we would anticipate that the number of guardsmen that would enroll in the university system would increase. So that projection done with the Department of Military Affairs Recruitment Office anticipate about doubling the number of students that would be enrolled, and so increasing our costs to about $300,000 per year. Now, the final stipulation here is that also the Guard receives, or the Department of Military Affairs receives $350,000 from the state of Montana per biennium for scholarships. They've agreed to transfer these funds to the university system to help offset those costs. So we would use those to buy down the tuition waivers, in other words, thus reducing what we our projected annual cost to $150,000 per year. So I guess I would add on a national level just a couple of comments here. How many states provide these types of waivers? And we are definitely in the minority when we are not providing those. Only six states currently do not provide waivers to their National Guard. This would put us, and some of those states actually provide full tuition waivers that work, and some of them even to the cost of education. So this is us really joining a large group of other states that are providing these benefits to students, and the cost at a very minimal cost. We provided the policy adjustment there for your review. It's pretty straightforward, and anticipate, of course, working and talking with the campuses leading up to the September board meeting and bringing this as an action item.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Trevor. Any questions or comments from board?
Two questions from Sheehy.
Regent Sheehy.
Tyler, I'm a little confused about the non-resident students. If they meet the requirement, they're eligible for the tuition waiver. It looks like the total tuition waiver can only be the annual cost of resident tuition only, so it's capped. But do they become residents by virtue of this? Or do they continue to be non-resident students with a capped waiver?
Mr. Chair, they do not become resident students. We treat them, we charge them resident rates and allow for the waiver, but they do not become resident students.
So, but they are only charged the resident rate, or are they charged the out-of-state rate and the waiver is capped?
Mr. Chair, Regent Chi, they are not charged the non-resident rate. They are charged the resident rate, and then the waiver is applied.
So then how do we treat them as non-resident students if they're charged the resident rate?
Mr. Chair, Regent Shee, we don't put them through the non-resident or the resident requirements in our policy, and only deal with them on the waiver side. So don't have to meet the criteria, the strict criteria we have to become a resident. They still remain a non-resident student enrolled at living in the state of Montana, but by the mere fact that they have joined the Montana National Guard, they are receiving this benefit. So it's a scholarship, in essence, and not a residency benefit.
Okay. Was that intended?
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, yes, absolutely. This was one of the strong suggestions from the Department of Military Affairs to improve their recruiting.
Okay. My second question is, I appreciate that we'll be receiving the $350,000 from the state of Montana as an offset. I'm wondering if we haven't watered down the expectation that members of the National Guard will seek federal grants and scholarships if they're on a full tuition waiver.
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, no, I do not believe that's the case. They, by another benefit for joining the Guard, are those tuition assistance programs from the federal government. Those and the GI Bill as well are, I believe, automatically applied to these students when they join the Guard if they are enrolled in post-secondary education.
Thank you, Tyler.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, back up to your first question. I think Deputy Commissioner Trevor mentioned sort of the out-of-state component of this or what other states are doing. The relevant part of this is that you can live in a state and be a member of a Guard in a different state. So one of the things that has really been challenging for Montana is that you have Montana residents actually that are joining Guards from other states because of the increased benefit opportunity from those neighboring states. So that recognition of resident and non-resident ultimately helps the Montana Guard recruit people to the Guard, and that's why they think we'll see some growth and returning numbers, and that has put them at a disadvantage when recruiting against neighbors. So that non-resident piece is important to try to recruit some of those neighboring state individuals back to participate in the Montana Guard and sort of level the playing field with our neighbors.
Thank you, Clay. That helps.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Any other questions? Yeah, Regent Tuss.
For the Deputy Commissioner, Tyler, can you explain again that I know that we're going to be receiving this offset from the Department of Military Affairs. Are you indicating that even with that offset, the actual cost that remains to the units of the system is $150,000? Do I have that correct?
Mr. Chair, Regent Tuss, yes, that's correct.
Okay. So those are real expenses to the units that these particular guardsmen would be attending, correct?
Mr. Chair, Regent Tuss, yes, that's absolutely correct. And at the September meeting, I'll have a chart that displays this.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the board? Any other questions or comments? I had a couple. So one is pretty simple, just language in the policy. I think probably we all know what last dollar awards are, but it might be something that we make an adjustment on to clarify what a last dollar award actually is. I know you go on the sentence right after that, after this is in LD, to kind of explain a little further, but I think if we can get that last dollar awards out and clarify, that would be helpful for future regents and for OCHI. And then the second comment, or I guess question, is as it relates to waivers, you know, these impact individual campuses, and so if you don't have this information now, it would be great to have it in our September meeting, but I'd be interested to see if there's any campuses that would be impacted by this maybe more so than others. I'm just thinking of, you know, Helena College being here. There may be some, they may be a little bit out of balance in terms of the percentage of guardsmen and women who are going to that campus. So I think that would be good for us to know as we're considering taking action on this item.
Mr. Chair, absolutely, we'll be prepared.
Any other questions from the board? All right, moving on to the last item on our agenda this morning, information.
Draft charter.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, the second to last information, item C, is the draft of the internal audit charter. You'll remember the past probably three or four meetings, we've had substantial conversations about the function of internal audit here within OT coordination across the system. I know we brought on Deidre onto the team at OCHI, and before us today we have a charter for consideration. So I'll pass it off to Ms. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I just want to start off by talking a little bit about what an audit charter is. For your knowledge, it's basically an agreement between management, the board, and the internal audit function to clarify the role, purpose, and responsibility of internal audit. So I feel like it's important to get this on the board agenda and discuss some of the key statements that I put into the charter there. So just for those who may have not been around, in November, there was a MUS internal audit policy that was passed by the board, and it speaks to the board reviewing and approving the internal audit charter. Not only does the board policy speak to it, but the international standards for internal audit also discuss the importance of a charter, basically to state the purpose, authority, and responsibility of the internal audit activity, and that it has to be formally defined in a document. So that's the reason that you guys have this before you today. In terms of how I went about creating the audit charter, I started with so MSU currently has their internal audit office headed by Daniel Adams, and then U of M Missoula has their internal audit function headed by ANTA. And what I did is I started off with MSU Bozeman's. They actually had an audit charter already. And then I looked at the various higher education audit charters around the nation just for comparison purposes. And I also went through the international audit standards to make sure that I was including all the pieces that are required as part of the standards. And after I drafted the policy, I had both U of M and MSU internal audit staff review the policy multiple times. We went through a couple different drafts. And so the document that you have in front of you is the final draft charter from me for your review and approval. So we will be looking at this again at the September meeting for a vote and approval. But for now, it's just an informational item. So let's go ahead and walk through a couple of points that I wanted to point out in the audit charter that are maybe unique to our specific audit charter, or just to draw out some important pieces. So the first piece there is the purpose and mission. And I really want to key into the fact, and I did this at the presentation at the last board meeting, that it really needs to be added value to the organization. So therefore, I'm going to focus a lot on tying the risk assessment to strategic objectives that the board and executive management have in place. That's going to be done, again, through that risk assessment, which in the process document that is also attached, you'll see I'm starting in on the work on that risk assessment. The standards, it's just important to note that internal audit is held to standards, and we do have to comply with those standards according to board policy and also best practices across the nation. So just keying into which specific standards those are is that piece. In terms of authority, I just want to point out that the campus internal audit directors will report functionally to me and then administratively to their president or the equivalent. In terms of my position, I'll report functionally to the chair of the Budget Audit and Enterprise Risk Committee and then functionally to the commissioner or their designee. The Budget and Audit Committee also will be responsible for making sure that they hear recommendations from the internal audits and take into consideration whether those recommendations or findings need to be presented to the full board for any reason. So going down to the Board of Regents' responsibilities, obviously review and approve the internal audit charter, which is will be on the September meeting. And then review and approve the MUS internal audit budget and resource plan. So that's the MUS specific budget here. And then review and approve decisions regarding the removal of an internal audit director or non-renewal of an internal audit director's contract. So that's both at my level and at the campus level also. And then also if there's any changes outside of normal board or university approved pay plans, they will also be responsible for reviewing those. In terms of the budget and audit committee, they'll review and approve the annual risk-based internal audit plan. So once I get through that risk assessment and the risks associated, they'll be responsible for approving that final annual audit plan in terms of which audits we're going to be conducting throughout that year. So, and then they'll also receive ongoing communication from me in terms of what audits have been going out across the system and recommendations that may exist out there. And then also the follow-up status in terms of whether those recommendations have been implemented by the campuses. In terms of independence and objectivity there, the internal audit director determines that independence or objectivity may be impaired. Basically, that impairment would need to be reported out to that budget and audit committee. And I think that's the main pieces through that section, and just that we are objective and independent, and if I have any concerns either at my level or at the campus internal audit level, that'll get reported at the appropriate level. So in terms of scope, it's important to note that not only do we provide assurance through the audits, but we also provide advisory services. And you'll see down after the bullets there, it kind of defines advisory services. And examples would include counsel, advice, facilitation, and training. A lot of times that's in the internal control front, but that is also a responsibility of internal audit. That's outside of the audits that they conduct. The other piece that is, I wouldn't say necessarily solely unique to the system office, but MSU Bozeman currently administers their compliance hotline at the internal audit level. So we're looking and working with Jessica Weltman at the compliance officer in terms of how do we look at that from the system level and if that's going to fall into internal audit or compliance officer realm. But we do think it's important that there is some type of compliance hotline there. So what we put into the charter is that it may administer, because that may fall into internal audit's lap. So in terms of that next paragraph, that's talking about enterprise risk management process. And I want to be clear here in terms of my role, since we don't have enterprise risk set up already. It's a key piece that goes into the risk assessment for internal audit. Therefore, I'm going to serve as a facilitation for this at this point. That doesn't mean that I'm going to take on any of the risks or own them myself, but that I'm going to manage and facilitate those risks in order to help create the risk assessment for the internal audit plan. So, going over to responsibility, pretty much just details out a lot of my responsibilities that I've already gone through. And then it's important to have a quality assurance and improvement program. So I'll also be setting that up from internal audit, both from an internal perspective, where we review audits and quality control. And I can see a lot of cross-functional reviews there between U of M and MSU and myself. So we'll be looking at those, and then as well as an external review in about 5 years, to where once we've been established, I think it'd be between 3 and 5 years, external review where somebody from another internal audit shop comes in and actually completes the review, the objective review of our organization and how we're set up and whether we're complying with standards. So basically an audit of the auditors. So that pretty much summarizes the charter itself, and then I've also attached a process document just to give everybody an idea of where we're at in the process and the responsibilities separated out there on the left-hand side between U of M internal audit, MSU internal audit, MUS internal audit, the audit committee, and then the Board of Regents as a whole. So Basically, we're going through the audit charter for informational purposes. Again, that will be looked at in the September meeting for approval. Once that approval is made, I'll be working with the Budget and Audit Committee to present risk assessment work in terms of the key risks that were identified and then work towards an internal audit plan for the year. I'm hoping to get that through that committee by November and then get started in on actual audits at the system level in November and December. And in that, underneath that green, there's kind of like a blue oval there, and that talks about the other things that I'll be working on outside of the audit work itself. So system-wide audit policies, procedures, a more defined process for the enterprise risk management, because the risk assessment this year, just because of time frames and the need to get out there and complete some audits, it's going to be abbreviated. So I would like to start working on a more specific process and policies and procedures there also. And then also looking at software implementation for audit analytics and work paper solutions. So, and then pretty much quarterly reports to the board on the audits that are being completed. So, and then that Budget and Audit Committee will decide if that needs to go to the full board meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Murray. Any comments or questions on the internal audit charter? Hearing none, I just have a comment. Thanking you for taking the time to put this together. It's a foundational document for the board, and certainly is going to be sort of added priority for the budget committee. I think obviously if you've done had the diligence to go out and kind of look nationally, look at national internal auditing standards, and looked at what's happening across the system, and we appreciate you moving this in front of the board.
Thank you.
Moving on to the last item for today's meeting, information item D, public records request policy. I will turn this over to legal counsel Hamill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Vic Hamill. The draft updates of our longstanding public records request and fee policy has been under discussion internally for a while, and I'll explain why. The two main changes draft for your consideration are driven by, one, the 2015 change to the statute, that is 26-1006 of the Montana Code, that changed the type of fees that could be charged for putting together a response to a specific request to the actual cost of the person or people fulfilling the request. So Exhibit A to our longstanding policy is updated to, and the prior specific charges are crossed out, and the term actual cost is put in the columns in Exhibit A. I'm sure you can see that. The second reason is because we've had a lot of inquiries from the campuses over the last year about what they should charge, when they should charge, and what we found out is that some campuses are charging, some are not. Here at OCHI, I've always charged for the public information request, you know, unless it's some seventh grader asking for something, for a report or something. So the reason we changed to the word, the key change, the word may in section 3D to should, not shall, is because for you to consider whether it would be the best practice for campuses to be more consistent about how and when they charge. Our OCHI policy has always mirrored the governor's office policy. Executive branch agencies all have public record policies with a fee schedule for charging, and a lot of them, if not all of them, do. I know that our policy has consistently mirrored the governor's office policy. So what brought about this draft change also is in May and April of 2019, we had discussions with the executive branch agencies and the governor's office about what the language should be in the fee schedule, and we all easily came to consensus that it should be actual cost. So again, that's the changes in attachment A. With the other attachment that you've probably heard about in the paper, the other change that you've heard about in the paper of may to should, not shall, charge when campuses shall charge and OCHI shall charge when, should charge when they get a public information request, is designed to spur your discussion today about what criteria we should have in that policy to get some consistency for how we charge when it comes to public records requests. There's lots of ways you could slice and dice that. You could, for example, have a policy that says we only charge the actual cost of fulfilling the request if it takes more than 2 hours to fulfill or 3 hours to fulfill, et cetera. That's up to you and your discretion, but the campuses and our office are hoping for some guidance that leads to consistent criteria of how we handle these today. With that, I'll turn it over to the back to the chair.
Thank you, Viv. Is there any questions, comments from the board?
I have a few.
Yeah, Regent Sheehy.
I have a strong reaction to the use of the word should in the new subsection D, the change from May. I would really oppose the use of the word should. I think it conflicts with the statute as reconstituted in 2015. So if you look at that statute 261006, it says that a public agency shall respond to a request in a timely manner. That I'm going to interrupt myself here, but the use of the word shall and may in the statute is pretty specific. And so if we're mirroring the statute, I think we should pay attention to that. Anyway, it says that we shall respond in a timely manner in one of two methods. One of them, first, is to make the public information available, period. Or providing the request in person of an estimate of the time and the fees charged. So if we say that these items shall be charged, we're really doing away, or should be charged, we're doing away with the first mandated option under the statute, which is simply making the information available. So I think the statute is set up as an either-or proposition, that if the request is onerous or it requires incurring actual costs, then it gives the agency the option of charging those costs. I understand the need for consistency, but I think we're doing away with the discretion that's built into the statute, and it's also built into the constitutional rights involved here, because by their very nature, they require a balancing of interests. So the statute starts off by stating that we're trying to ensure efficient and effective management of public records in accordance with the right to know, privacy, and participate. So this is a balancing from the get-go. I know that agencies struggle with it, as do frequent requesters of documents. We struggle with it. My clients and side, I represent a lot of media interests and a lot of individuals who are seeking public documents. So I would definitely stick with the may, just because the statute does allow two options, one of which is not charging. And I think that the A through F in the new section D, that I would rather not put that in a policy, because those are not settled matters of law, whether legal fees can be charged. For example, if you have in-house counsel, there's an argument to be made, and I think a fairly good argument, that part of that job is fulfilling public records requests, which is mandated by the open meeting law. So I would change section D. Otherwise, I see what you're doing to comport with the 2015 changes to the statute, and don't have any objections beyond that section.
Thank you, Regent Sheehy. Commissioner Christian?
Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, I appreciate that feedback. This is, after all, a draft, and this is exactly what we're seeking. I have no particular passion about the word may or should. I think we should not use language like must and shall. I think the importance is that we get guidance from this board that we can disseminate across campuses to create some consistency. And that has been at the heart of this conversation. May in the past has left, candidly, all campuses sort of doing things different. But we don't need to change the word to have a conversation about consistency and give some guidance from this board to the campuses. And I think that extends to conversations we can have between now and September on how to clean that up and ultimately recommendations that I would like to see the board express in September around some of the things you hit on, which is we could not charge for these at all, but we have to certainly recognize there is a cost to them. We do hundreds of these across the system that vary in size and complexity, some needing legal review, the rest. There is unfortunately no free lunch. So some pocket is paying for these. I think that is part of the discussion on the consistency piece. So people know across the state what to expect. Providing upfront estimates is a process that we have engaged over the years, and I think that's an important part of the conversation as well. But ultimately, this is exactly the conversation we want to have with the board to give us some guidance on, you know, a host of possibilities from not charging at all to charging for everything. I don't think we ought to do the latter, because we certainly don't want to preclude people from access to public records. We certainly embrace the right to know, and we'll continue to embrace that. We just need some guidance on for the sake of consistency. Like I said, I don't think that necessarily means the language change. It just means some guidance given by the board that ultimately can be disseminated through this office.
Thank you,
Commissioner.
Mr.
Do you know how? Oh, sorry. May I ask a question?
Yeah, Regent Sheehy.
It's a question followed by a suggestion. Do we know how many of our requests come from media interests, not because they're special, but because as frequent flyers in the system, they generally have an idea of how this actually works at different agencies? And that follows with my suggestion that in 2015, when the legislature revamped this statute, they did talk to media interests. We were at the table on behalf of media interests. So it might be wise to make some inquiries of the press as to what they're seeing at other agencies and what their views are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Regent Sheehy, certainly appreciate that suggestion. We can continue those. I will tell you that as part of this work over the last 6 months, as Viv said, that she has had meetings with other legal staff in other agencies to try to create consistency throughout the system. Not for the sake of a revenue source, for the sake of consistency and for the sake of addressing an expense that is there and how it should best be handled. But we can continue that. Certainly glad to engage media partners on what their needs are, what their expectations are, and try to facilitate those public record requests as best that we possibly can, with staff that has the time and attention to do them and do them right. That's been a struggle at the campus level, and some of what facilitated the conversation is at times those requests can be significant, and just trying to balance, as you, the word you used before, in not only how we disseminate those requests, but how we staff for them and ultimately deal with the costs of those. That's part of the conversation. But I'm glad to engage anybody that wants to discuss this between now and September. We would certainly accept written comments, and we'll reach out to various partners around state agencies and around the media to try to get as much feedback as we can.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
just a brief comment. Yeah, I echo what Clay, of course, has said. What we want is to get something in place, giving them guidance on what's the best thing to do, the best way to handle it. It doesn't matter if it's May, just as long as we have some criteria because we don't want to be accused of being friendly with one newspaper or individual, and we're not charging one source, but one requester, but we're charging the other requester, particularly in light of the upcoming political campaigns. We get a lot of requests. I just did one from a political think tank. We'll be getting a deluge of those in the coming year or two. We also do get, you know, some aberrant attorneys who are using our public records request for discovery, which instead of using the normal court process, which can result in an enormous amount of time. I've spent as upwards of, not while in this office, $20,000 worth of legal time just reviewing one request. We have always charged legal fees and legal time for review and redactions in all the state agencies, including OCHI. There is one case right now that's on appeal to the Montana Supreme Court to clarify whether we can continue to charge legal fees for our redactions and reviews, but that's the only one I know of. Up until that one district court decision, it has always been perfectly permissible to charge legal fees, and some state agencies have been awarded them in particular cases.
Thank you, Viv. Any other questions or comments from the board? Any other questions or comments? So I just have one comment. I appreciate working through this policy and the conversations we'll have between now and September. I understand the sort of inconsistency of which we applied this policy across the system, and so I think maybe it's something that we need to be thinking about as it relates to attachment A and the actual cost, that there's consistency and a sort of strategy for tracking how each of the campuses are identifying the estimates and providing those estimates to those seeking public records. So I think that level of consistency will address some of the things that is currently an issue within the system. So I think that's just one other thing that we sort of add to the strategy that maybe you can provide some insights on and how we would apply that depending on whatever language we use or is under consideration for the September board meeting.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Well, that is the last item in our board meeting today. Any other comments from members of the board? Commissioner?
No, thank you all for your time.
Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, Casey.
Thank you.
Thank you.